Welcome to My African Aesthetic, a podcast that interrogates the African aesthetic in African architecture and design.
On this podcast, you'll hear about the work, philosophy, and design process of African architects and designers practicing in Africa and the diaspora.
My name is Eunice Nanzala Schumacher. I'm a Ugandan architect and designer living and working in Norway.
And my name is Penina Achayo-Laker. I am a Ugandan graphic designer, researcher, and educator living and practicing in the USA.
Our podcast features conversations with designers working to provide architecture and design solutions for Africa.
We would like this to become a platform where our guests share their knowledge and experiences on designing in the diverse, hybrid, and dynamic socioeconomic, cultural, and political African context.
We are looking forward to embarking on this journey with you. Welcome to part two of our conversation with Professor Mogende, a transdisciplinary industrial designer, consultant, educator, and researcher with special interest in the pivotal role of design thinking in advancing the developmental agenda on the African continent. In this episode, we talk about his career, lessons learned from his experiences in his career, and his current work at his design and consultancy firm, Holos Creative Solutions in Kenya. Welcome back.
So I want to bring you back to something you hinted at that you said hopefully we can talk about is, you know, how you describe Africa with a K versus Africa with a C.
Yes. Well, there's this notion of Africology with a K, and it's an epistemological school of thought, essentially, that says that we should add to the discourse on Africa. So if you look at Africa with a C, which is the way the rest of the world has described the continent historically, it would be what I'd call a view of Africa from the outside looking in. Now, what we're saying is that that is not necessarily a false narrative, but we need to enrich the narrative with something that is homegrown. And so Africa with a K, if you may, is a co-created narrative from the continent by people living on the continent. If you may, we could say a view of Africa from the inside looking out. So this is the new way we try to add to the discourse and enrich the debate to say that there's many ways to look at the continent and not the traditional way that someone like Pascal Eze once said in an acronym PIDIC, which was poverty, illiteracy, disease, instability, and corruption. So we're saying the danger of the single story is that we need to expand our understanding of the continent and let people on the continent speak. One of the things that we really ascribe to when we talk about Africa with a K is that the one that Chinua Achebe references from Nigeria. He says that until lions have their own historian, tales of the hunt will always glorify the hunter.
Yes.
And by saying that, we're saying we need the historians of the lions to come forth and to also share the perspective of the continent from an authentic place. But just again, to complete that thought, all 2,200 languages plus on the continent spell Africa with a K. Okay, a few non-African languages like Dutch and German also spell Africa with a K. But the point we were making was that if you ask or you look at the way Africa is spelled by Africans, it's with a K. So it may look like a simple typographical amendment, but it's actually much deeper philosophically and epistemologically. So we're hoping that we encourage people of the continent to co-create a new narrative of a more confident and creative Africa that the rest of the world then can look at. If we don't tell our own stories, no one else will.
I would like to ask, what does the African aesthetic mean for you? And how is understanding our aesthetic important for designers in Africa and the diaspora working to provide solutions for Africa?
Thank you. For me, the African aesthetic is about authenticity. It also references the environment in which people live. There's a kind of anonymity also that the traditional way in which Africans created work, they did not seek, recognition in the formal sense that the West does, where you pen a signature to your work. It was done as a labor of love. Done as a labor of love and as a contribution to one's community. In fact, as Khalil Gibran, the famous Lebanese philosopher poet, once said, work is love made visible. And I would use that as a reference for the way in which African craftsmen and designers or artists work traditionally. But having said that, I celebrate African textiles. So I have a collection of African shirts all the way from Nigeria to Senegal to Ethiopia, Kenya, South Africa, Uganda. I have lots of them. And what I do is every time I travel to a part of the continent, I look for the local fabric. And when I get a nice shirt that looks, you know, traditional and authentic, I buy one and I wear it. So I celebrate the fact that African aesthetics fundamentally references nature. It has bold patterns and colors which have rich symbolism and meaning. This is something that a lot of people seem not to realize. In fact, that conversation I had when I gave a presentation, I think it was in Sweden, where I was explaining why African curios and crafts, you know, the little statuettes, why they look so grotesque by Greco-Roman standards, when everyone else is trying to get something that looks almost photoreal. Why are Africans creating these strange-looking pieces out of wood? We were taught in art that the human head fits into the body about 7.5 to 8 times. If you look at some of these statuettes that I'm referencing, the human head fits about 3 or 4 times into the body. So it looks grotesque in that sense. But if you look at the symbolism that is represented in those crafts, you will start to see cues that tell you about the role of the person that is being depicted, the gender of the person that is depicted, and all kinds of patterns that are tactile. In fact, one thing I like about African art is, and design is that it's very tactile. Even a blind person can actually enjoy it in that sense. So African aesthetics is also inclusive because it's fluid. You know, we don't stick to a certain template. We are constantly experimenting and evolving. And so in that sense, I can only see things getting better. It's also very, it appropriates from other sources. It's dynamic. So some of the fabrics we think are African actually came from places like Malaysia or even Holland or even Germany. But we've taken them and then made them our own because of the patterns we've used or the colors we've used, in that sense. So that's why I celebrate African aesthetics, because it's constantly evolving, but it's also true to form because it references authentic sources of inspiration. And often it's anonymous because people are not seeking to advance themselves. They're actually making a contribution to their community.
Wow. Very, very well said. I wish we could all speak about Africa the way you do, because just even listening to you talk about our continent, I just can't help but smile with so much pride. Like, we're so rich in so many things. And I think the quote you shared from Chinua Achebe that speaks to the story always glorifying the hunter until the lion learns how to write is really a great way to capture how we should really rise to the forefront as Africans and tell our stories, because when we tell them from our perspective, the way we paint pictures is like no other. You know, there's so many layers, and so just really thank you for wrapping that up for us in a really nice way.
Just as a conclusion, let me just say one last thing. Those African shirts that I reference, that I wear, my friends used to call them my happy shirts, because they think they're very confident and bold, compared to the drab clothes that are often worn elsewhere. But just to give you an example, someone like Nelson Mandela, who I'm happy you all like, because I was inspired by the man, he used to wear some shirts, silk shirts, which people refer to as the Madiba shed. I don't know if you remember that. But if you look at the so-called Madiba shed and you went to Malaysia, places like Kuala Lumpur, you discover that that's actually worn quite frequently by the men there. So the beauty is that African design is also referenced in other places, and that's why I find it very inclusive and sometimes universal.
Professor, you have lived and worked around the world. How has this influenced your practice as a designer, researcher, and educator?
Yeah, it has enriched my experience. That's the first thing. I think traveling is an education in itself, and that encourages many as can travel to do so. And to do so with the kind of wide-eyed wonderment that children are so good at. I think there's a cynicism that comes with age, which should be banished by every creative person, because you can learn from different contexts. When I travel, the first thing I do is just to see there's so many new things coming up, but also the similarities between different contexts. So traveling around the world has been the best thing that I it has helped my understanding as a human being tremendously. And as a creative person, it has enriched me beyond words, really.
That's fantastic. Professor, I remember when we first met you and talked to you, you shared very enthusiastically about someone who has been a huge inspiration for you, especially on your path to becoming a designer, a really powerful African woman. And so I would love for you to share with our listeners who has inspired you and continues to inspire your work.
Yes, that is actually very fitting. I'd like to pay tribute to Esther Mahlangu, who's a traditional Ndebele artist, who will be 85 years old on November 11th this year. And I think she started her art when she was in her mid-teens. They had this tradition where the mothers would teach their daughters the traditional crafts and also painting techniques using ostrich feathers and natural pigment. And I had the good privilege of meeting her in the same April of 1999, believe it or not. That's already what? How many years? Is that 21 years already?
That should be 21.
Yeah, 21.
Yeah, okay, thank you. That I've just redeemed myself. I thought it was much longer. So I met Esther at a critical junction in my own career because I'd just come back to Africa. I was teaching at the University of Nairobi at the time, and I was exploring the richness of our continent, and then I met her. And I was immediately struck by her passion, her humility, and her talent. And that was when I began my lifelong passion for the African aesthetic, or the various expressions of art and design on our continent. And Esther up to today remains the pivotal figure in my, she's my hero when it comes to design inspiration on the continent. And at 85, she's still going strong. The Somalis have a beautiful proverb. They say that be a mountain or lean on one. I think everyone needs to be inspired by someone who they consider to be a giant in their career. If you have a chance to engage with that person, that's really a bonus. But I think we all have our creative heroes, and Esther is mine.
Wow. We know that you were president of the World Design Organization from 2015 to 2017. What are some highlights, lessons, or experiences from this time that you could share with us?
Yeah, well, the number one lesson or experience I picked up as being part of the World Design Organization was the opportunities of engaging with designers around the world. Because the World Design Organization essentially is the organization that protects and promotes industrial design globally, and it holds a consultative status to the United Nations. So the membership comes from the entire planet. So I had the chance during that time to travel to different parts of the world and to meet with designers, particularly younger designers. So the highlight for me was my focus on young designers around the world. I felt that as future leaders, we needed to engage with them in a way that was constructive. I believe in something called reverse mentorship, where I have mentors who are actually younger than me, and you guys are turning out to be exactly those kind of people, because it keeps one in touch with a generation or a cohort that one otherwise is not themselves naturally in. And so I learned a lot from the young designers, and I continue to learn a lot from them. The other thing I did was, when I was president, I led our team to engage with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. If you remember, those started in 2015, and they will they last until 2030. So I managed to motivate the global design community to start to contribute towards the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, and that continues to this day. The other thing is, having been the first president from Africa, I felt that I had the opportunity to be an ambassador for the continent, because a lot of people did not know what happens on the continent. So I had the great privilege of speaking, as much as I was meant to be the president of a global body, and therefore my constituency was global. I still had this pet topic that whenever I got the chance, I talked about design in Africa. And I managed to hopefully advance the African Lions narrative. And that has been very, very fruitful. And I made friendships that last up today. So that is very good for me. I really appreciate the connections I made and the quality of friendships that I was able to develop internationally.
Yes, I think that's great. And that also speaks to just how your background as a transdisciplinary designer really is able to position you in such sort of positions where you're able to speak about design to multiple audiences, like on different stages globally. I'm wondering if you could share with us a little bit more about, so you've talked about how being able to work at the fringes of the profession and how that has allowed you to co-create with diverse audiences and also work on socially conscious design. At seeing that you're the chief design officer at Holos Creative Solutions Limited Africa, can you tell us a little bit about what kind of projects you're working on and what that work really means to you?
Yeah, thank you. Well, at the consultancy that I run with my wife Mutoni, whose background is in marketing and market insight and strategy, I bring the human-centered design aspect to the applied research that we do. So we recently had a project which was under the auspices of community-centered design, which is basically an extension of the human-centered design approach, or better known as design thinking, but now applying it to community level, not just individuals or small groups. So an international client had approached us because they had a problem with hair extensions that are discarded by women after they've gone to the salon and want a new hairstyle. And the way in which the synthetic hairs were disposed was becoming an environmental hazard. We had animals and children or choking on some of those materials, which was unfortunate. And some of them even found their way into people's food. So they gave us that task of asking, is there anything we can do with this? It's like an $8 billion industry, this synthetic hair industry. And in Kenya, even though we banned plastic I think it was back in 2017 or 2016, we still had that problem. So as industrial designers or as designers, we use human-centered design or design thinking and engaged with the community. So we posed the challenge to them. We asked them, what do you think you can do with it? Do you agree that it's a problem? They said, yes. Are there ways in which we can improve the collection of the hairs so that they don't become environmental problems? And then we went further and asked, are there possible ways to upcycle this discarded material so that, it can have an economic value? Because we find the carrot is a lot more attractive than the stick. If you tell people do not litter, it's not as attractive as saying trash for cash. you know? Mm-hmm. So the community came up with the idea that they could leave products or use the synthetic material, because it's basically fiber, to make a product. So they came up with beautiful baskets, which they wove. The men, that's the women, the men also came up with the idea that they could use the hairs that are not of a certain, you know, a consistent length, to mix with clay bricks, since they use the fire clay bricks for building. And they did, and we tested them and found they were actually stronger. And many other products that this community is actually developed. So we have a video, it's called Unwasted. You can actually check it out on YouTube. It's called Unwasted. If you look for it, you can find it there. And we captured the process and some of the highlights of our learning. And the client, needless to say, was very happy with the outcome, because they felt that now they are not being part of the problem, but being part of the solution. So the project is ongoing. So now we've reached the point of creating a business model for the, you know, cooperatives that are making those products, so that they can actually earn a decent living from them.
Wow, that's really fantastic. Do you feel like this work you do as a consultant also has found its way into the classroom or into the way you teach, seeing that you're also professor of industrial design at Machakos University? Do you teach any social impact or socially conscious classes that allow for you to have your professional work merge into some of the educational aspects as well?
Yes, indeed. Thanks, Selina, for asking that, because that is correct. Some of the research assistants were actually students at the Machakos University, and I had already trained them in design thinking as an entire class. So when I asked for volunteers to assist with the community-focused project, a couple of them came up and volunteered. And, of course, they earned some pocket money in the process as research assistants. So that was useful. And also they said that they thought it was an interesting concept, design thinking, but seeing it in action, for them, that was priceless. And I think that was encouraging for me as an educator to see the theories we teach and the tools that we give our students actually tested in the real world.
Yeah.
And also tweaked. So when I speak about community-centered design as an extension of human-centered design, now I have a valid case which I share with the students, and they seem to understand it better. I even invite some of those community members who obviously don't speak English well, but they speak Swahili, and they come and tell the students things about design thinking that the students wouldn't otherwise know. So it's a kind of a two-way traffic, in the sense that we took the university into the community and brought the community into the university. And that has been incredibly rich as a collaborative approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really valid, because I think in some ways too, what you're doing is shifting and challenging the way we teach in an African context. I know that when I was studying in Uganda, I don't know if this was a similar experience to you, but Eunice and I have had countless conversations about just the very passive nature of the way we were taught, and how, you know, whether part of that is also cultural, that the teacher and their word was final, and that you had no business asking questions or critiquing anything they said, but it was your job to just, you know, memorize what was given to you by the teacher, so you can replicate that on a national exam or final exam if you wanted to be successful. And I think that what you're doing at the University of Machakos by involving students in a hands-on way to also engage these processes is really, truly the best way to learn how to apply design thinking in real-world settings. So I think that is really key to the way we should really think about education.
Sorry, I was just going to say something else we started with the students. The Machakos University Modeling Association made me their patron, and immediately the first thing I asked them was how we could give them a chance to contribute to the life of the institution and beyond. So we came up with a concept. We call it AfriDay 80/20, And so the idea is that one day in a week, so the 80-20 principle, so 4 days in a week, they dress the way they like, but on every Friday, which is the 20%, they dress up in African outfits. And so these students, actually now, some of them have even started businesses because they got orders from people who saw their nice designs and said, hey, where can I get what you're wearing? And some of them actually are doing very good business even as I speak. So I think it's important that teachers encourage students to engage with the real world, and that teachers also, kind of create an environment in which experimentation, play and fun is actually encouraged, even within constraints of resources, because young people are very creative. All they need is just the impulse and the catalytic, input that, a good environment can actually give them.
I was speaking to someone who is very enthusiastic about investing in Africa, and he's actually a pharmacist by profession, but he has been so captured by this design thinking concept and design thinking for businesses, and he's like, and he just he told me, if only designers on the continent would go and talk to the existing businesses, to the communities, if they could only look around them and see the need and develop products or solutions for that context, then there would be no need for the copy-paste mentality that has existed for a long time, which is, of course, inspired by the Eurocentric way of looking at design and thinking that the solutions come from the West. And yet, so I like, that's why I really love the project or Unwasted. It's a problem that is there. It's a problem that addresses the issue of waste, I think, the issue of sustainability, the issue of, and is it a cultural thing? Because we Africans love to braid our hair. We've loved to do it since I don't know when. And for me, I feel like this is one of those projects that that when I saw it, I kind of understood more what this friend of mine meant when he said that. And when we look at agriculture, for example, which I'm very enthusiastic about, looking at how much food wastage there is on the continent and how many opportunities are there, both for businesses but also designers, because designers are everywhere in every field. So it's just my reflections on the project, but also on what it means when it comes to responding to our problems with our solutions so that we are relevant.
This is just what you're sharing. This is one more reason why we need to know that knowledge is everywhere, and you can actually solve problems which are way outside our field if we, just observe the world around us.
What is inspiring you right now, and what keeps you going? Because I'm amazed at how much you're doing and how much you've done, but I'm even more amazed at how much energy, you're like positive energy. When me and Penina listened to you the first time, we're just like, yes, they're very, you own positive energy. So my question is, what is it that inspires you and keeps you optimistic and positive as a person, but also as a designer on the continent?
What keeps me excited is three words. I mentioned it: Africa with a K, design, and innovation. And when those three words are found in a sentence together, I get delirious in excitement. I'm really excited about, and when I say Africa with a K, I'm saying things that Africans themselves are starting to narrate about their own experiences, whether it's someone like Bibi Seck with his woven furniture, or Peter Mabeo from Botswana with his lovely pieces of furniture, or Cyrus Kibiru from Kenya with his spectacles made of recycled material. So I'm really excited about what's coming out of this continent. Design, because that's my, my background, and innovation, because it's constantly evolving. And we live in exciting times, because with innovation, we can deploy technologies to do things that we could only have dreamt of when we were younger. And so for me, the future is very exciting. because design is getting traction and currency, and people are starting to realize that, as the World Economic Forum predicted, that some of the skills we need for the 21st century include problem solving and creativity. And that is smack in the space that we are as designers, you know, in the broad sense of the word. So that excites me. And again, if I was to describe myself in a very brief way, I'd say I'm incurably inquisitive. So because I'm so inquisitive and there's so much happening, I'm like a kid in a candy store. So I'm so excited about being, you know, in the right place at the right time and having lived long enough to see some of the dreams you had when you were younger now, you know, come to fruition. So this is exciting for me. Indeed, the 21st century is Africa's century. And as I mentioned previously, it won't happen by default. It can only happen by design. So I want to be part of that, you know, force that brings, you know, design as a catalyst into Africa for Africa's development.
Wow. And that inquisitive nature is completely and utterly contagious when we hear you speak. So I just, Eunice and I are so thankful that you honored our invitation to join us on our podcast. And for our listeners, we are going to link everything that Professor Mugendi has been a part of and talked to. We'll have links to his consultancy. We'll have links to the Network of Africa Designers, a link to the amazing video on Wasted, a project that he did with a community in Kenya. So we will have all that in our description. Do check out his website and follow his projects. And once again, Professor Mugendi, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, Panina and Eunice, for having me. And feel free to have another conversation with me if you do have a chance.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please join us for more conversations and interviews with African educators, creatives, architects, urban planners, and designers as they share their knowledge and experiences about practicing in Africa and the diaspora.
Remember to subscribe, leave a review, or share this podcast with other people that might be interested in this content. Thank you for joining us today.